Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pod Tackler, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Dust Storm.
And I am your replacement host, Godzilla T.
Well, co-host right now. You're not replacement. You're on here normally, so I wouldn't say you're replacement.
Aw, come on. You're stealing my thunder. You know, the replacements. You ever watch the movie?
No.
Oh.
No.
Well, that
Sorry.
Was wasted.
There's lots
Somebody
of movies I haven't
to
seen.
This will understand that.
Yes, I'm sure I'll probably get some amount of hate tweet or something. It's like, you haven't watched this thing? But anyways, we are going to be doing a dedicated set of shows now talking about Hunt the Truth. Because there's so much that's going into every episode that gets released, we're actually going to separate out the Hunt the Truth episodes with the rest of the stuff that we're going to be talking about. So this is the first one that is basically set apart from the rest, and we'll be doing two shows per week basically until E3. So if you didn't get enough of us before, or if you were sick of us before, well, now you get us twice a week, so have fun. But we have another episode 3 of Hunt the Truth, this one called Critical Condition. And I think there's quite a few things that we mentioned on our last show talking about Hunt the Truth that kind of got confirmed in this, but we'll get to that here in a little bit. First off, there's a couple other things since episode 2 got released that we need to talk about that was actually on the Hunt the Truth website. And first is a picture of a glass planet that Ben took on a previous assignment. Now, I'm not sure where this is exactly. I don't know if the numbers and the letters on the bottom of the image mean anything. Godzilla, have you heard anything about where this could be?
There's been a few theories. One of them is the Chief's home city. There's been a couple other names thrown out there. I don't think anybody really has a confirmation on what city it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it would kind of fall in line that it was Eridanus, you know, with, you know, the previous stuff that's been in, you know, on the website. So, you know, it could be a high possibility that that's what it is. All I know is I'm glad I don't live there.
I don't think anyone lives there anymore. That was one of the things that I saw people say. I think another one was Reach was a possibility. Some people said New Alexandria because of what happened in Halo 4, but that doesn't really match up. I don't know why people would say New Alexandria, because that was just the composer. It wasn't actually being glassed.
You mean New Phoenix?
No, I saw people say like New Alexandria. New Phoenix. Yeah. But that wouldn't really make much sense.
Yeah, because the composer doesn't do any physical damage to buildings.
Right.
It just
right.
digitizes human bodies.
Right.
God, that sounds bad.
So I'm guessing... I think it got the point across. That, to me, says either Eridanus 2 or Reach would be the two things I would kind of think from that. And if Ben is the war journalist that we kind of have come to know, where he's in a lot of the high-profile areas, I'm thinking it's probably Reach. Because Eridanus 2, I don't think had much exposure in terms of, like, this is one of the big places in the Outer Colonies. Reach was a big one. Obviously, Harvest was a big one. So, I would say, given the situation, my gut would be Reach.
Yeah, it kind of all depends on how long you'd been following the war, as far as, you know, actively going out and looking at, war zones and stuff like that. I mean, it's not uncommon for, you know, war reporters to travel, you know, extremely long distances to get the story. So, I mean,
right.
Yeah, you're probably right in the fact that Reach would probably be a more popular place to take the picture, just for the simple fact that it was the military headquarters for the UNSC, or, you know, one of them. It was a very strategic, planet where Eridanus, it was a colony. But, you know, it could go either way. I do kind of lean more towards a Reach shot, but with everything else that is in this, you know, on the website, it all kind of points back to Chief, you know, in a way.
Right. That's just our thoughts on it. I don't know if we'll get more information about it, about where the shot is. I don't think it really matters too much or plays too much of an important role in how the rest of Hunt the Truth is going to play out. But nonetheless, it's still an interesting picture. I don't think we've ever gotten a good set image of what glassing is supposed to look like. There's been lots of descriptions of it in the books. We've seen planets being glassed from cutscenes and stuff, but we've never have, I think, seen the end result of a glassing in the Halo universe anywhere. Or am I
well, we
right
got
with that?
Kind of.
Can you think of anything?
In the the little short stories. It was the
I guess a little bit in Reach. At the end of Reach, maybe?
Well, you know the short stories they put them out? Oh, what was that video series they put out? You know, where they had all the different types of anime. I'm blanking on it right at the moment.
Yeah, oh, Legends.
The one where they're following the elite that's traveling around the planet that he... They didn't glass, but they carved, with their glassing beam, they carved a symbol into the planet. So we got to see a little bit of it there. Granted, the way they did the animation in it, it was kind of hard to distinguish it from, you know, Earth that hadn't been touched. But they've always done a real good job of describing it in the books. And, you know, the way they describe it in the book and what books and what I see on that in that picture, yeah, pretty much matched up.
Yeah, pretty much. You see some of the structural pieces left over there, and then everything else that was on the ground was basically melted to glass. Kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, after you see lava flowing somewhere, although without the crustacean left over.
Well, I mean, it's intense heat. And, you know, for some of the people out there that may remember, you know, back in shop class when they did a casting, you know, we're teaching about casting, you'd see a similar effect in the casting where, you know, because you're using sand to shape the mold and you pour molten metal in there.
Yeah.
You get kind of the same effect. You get kind of a, you know, a shiny to the inside of the sand when you break it apart. But anyway, yeah, that looks just like they describe it in the books.
Pretty much. I never took a shop class, so I'm just going to take your word for it. I'm sure other people will agree with you. The other thing that we got before the episode got released, as we were pounding F5 on our keyboards, was a postcard that Ben got from someone with the initials of JW, which we'll actually find out what those initials stand for in the podcast. And it was a podcast from, I guess, one of Saturn's moons. And it was a postcard that says, "Get away from it all in sunny Castellanta." I think it's how you said it. Castellaneta.
Yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced. Castellaneta.
Yeah. There you go.
Way to resort.
Come on in, the gravity's fine. Yeah,
true.
So it's basically a beach resort on one of Saturn's moons. And on there it says, "Hey Ben, great chat. If you're ever this side of Saturn, look me up." So this is obviously a postcard after the interview. So it looks nice. I guess they're terraforming a lot of planets. I know they terraformed Mars and they have the moon base. I didn't know they had anything specifically on Saturn, so that's interesting. But they have a beach planet for the most part as a vacation spot within the solar system.
Well, they do make mention of it. I think it's in Contact Harvest. They do when they are out looking at new worlds. They are looking at worlds that don't
it's been a
need
while
to be terraformed.
And I've only read that
don't
one
need
once,
to be terraformed.
Whereas, like the original trilogy, I've read a couple times. But so that's all the stuff that we got before the episode came out. So shall we just dive into the episode now?
Yeah, let's move on to that.
So we start off with a new character that we haven't seen in Hunt the Truth yet, and that is Ray Kurzig. That's how you say that. Ray is a good friend of Ben's, and he's a good independent analyst, very efficient, very resourceful, someone that Ben trusts, and he actually had him go research some of the stuff that Ellie and Katrina had told him about John's past. So he was able to meet up with Kurzig after a little while, after he was able to go get the info that he needed. And Kurzweg basically confirmed what Ellie and Katrina were saying, how John died at the age of 6 and how John's parents were still alive, still around, on Eridanus 2. And Ben, trying to make the story all fit well and everything, tells Ray, no, that's not possible. You're wrong. And Ray comes back and says, well, tell that to all the merchants and people that say he's alive, that he's paying bill, that they're paying bills, and that they're still around. So it's kind of hard to contradict when lots of people, and especially if something as like government specific as paying bills, says that they're alive after they're supposedly dead.
Yeah, I particularly like the point he made about the genetic specialist, or what did they call him?
The autoimmune specialist.
Yeah, autoimmune specialist. Right. In 2517. I wonder why they needed him.
I don't know. I don't remember if we mentioned this specifically on the last podcast. I think we did, where John died, his clone died at the age of 6, shortly after he got taken from Halsey, because of the clones died off really quickly. They quickly, what's the word I'm looking for? Degenerated?
Some of the clones degenerated very rapidly.
Degraded. Yeah, yeah, degraded. That was the word I was looking for.
Where they only lasted a few weeks. Some of them did make it a few years, but they were, you know, they were extremely handicapped. You know, some of them couldn't walk. Some of them, you know, they had very serious handicaps due to the cloning. And then eventually they would die too. But John's clone was one of the unlucky ones. Well, I guess they were all unlucky, but it only lasted a few weeks. So you can see where they were bringing in the specialist to just to try to figure out what's wrong.
Right. One of the things that they don't exactly go through in the audio, but Ben mentions, is that Ray had gathered this library of documentation that showed John's parents had the bills that they were paying, all the other merchant documentation, and even what you said, the insurance claim for the autoimmune specialist. So everything that Ellie and Katrina were saying was supported by what Ray had found. So, of course, wanting to try to clear everything up, Ben goes back to Sully, calls Oni, tries to get Sully on the phone, and of course Sully has this chip attitude, tell me that everything's going well, like to hear the good news. And Ben's like, it's actually not as clean cut. This death certificate problem is cropping up again. And Sully tries to reiterate the fact again and again, holding on to this one thing, that glass planets have bad records. And he keeps on saying this over and over and over again. Like, it just screams conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
At this point. And Sully asks Ben if he's recording. And of course he says yes. And that was his cue to cut recording. And after that, Ben says that the rest of the conversation was basically them discussing on whether or not he wanted to keep this job. And of course he did. So the call pretty much ended. And I think we can assume at that point it was Ben basically had to shut up, take it from Sully that he needed to do this right, talk to the people that they had lined up for him, and then just go with that story. Not find any of these extra contacts that he's been going to, not trying to dig into the meat of the true backstory behind Chief as much as he was doing.
And we all see how that worked.
Yeah, because he keeps on pulling on threads. This one little thread that happened at the very first episode with the one death record keeps on coming.
Yeah, my favorite part of that conversation is, do glass people have bad records? He's getting so frustrated.
Oh, yeah.
And he cuts the recording, and then, you know, of course, they, do you want to do the next interview? Yeah. I just like how that played out, because it felt right. You know, the conversation felt right for what, you know, Oni's trying to do. And I've heard a theory, and this is kind of a wild theory, Sully might actually be trying to expose the secret and pointing Ben in the kind of right direction, but making it look like he's not. Like I said, it's a wild theory. There's not a whole lot in here to substantiate it yet.
Right.
Because, you know, so far Sully has, you know, he's been basically acting like an Oni officer. But if you remember back and forward into Dawn, what was he doing? He was hacking Oni records.
Right.
So he might not exactly be completely on Oni's plan. It'll be interesting to see if that one actually pans out. It's just, like I said, it's a random theory that I've heard a few people talking about on Twitter and some other places. But on to, you know, the next part where he starts to, what was the next thing he hears from?
Jacob Walker.
Jacob Walker. Postcard Man. Yes, Postcard Man.
So the next interview is from this retired Navy guy who has a lot under his belt. He called, or Ben calls him up. And of course, being on a beach vacation resort type place, Ben mentions that he wasn't wearing a shirt when he answered the call. So put on the shirt, got to talking about how during his time in boot camp, there was this one person, John, basically, who he thought was like the age of 19 or 20, all jacked up and tall. And then he found out later on that John was actually like the age of 16, really young, real just like buff jack dude. He mentioned how like a lot of the stuff during boot camp, there's a lot of like talk and uppity up, and there are people being dumbasses and jackasses and
chest puffing,
getting all like uppity up about all the stuff that they're doing. But John was, even though he was like kind of this big figure, he was someone that was kind of just like quiet to his own in the background type person. Not even really a problem to anyone else. Not really getting in with that uppity up crowd. And over time, as they were doing training exercises, he talked about how John was the one that always took responsibility, always was the last one to finish something for his team. So it kind of really shows the qualities of a leader and how John was kind of revered from his point of view, and it really made an impact on him.
Yeah, he also mentioned how, you know, whenever his squads went out on these long hikes and stuff, you know, he would be right up front at the beginning, but as the hike progressed, you know, he'd kind of fade back through the pack, and you know, he'd help the people that, you know, guy twisted his ankle or something, you know, he'd help him along until he, you know, got his foot back under him, and then he'd always make sure he finished last. So because the punishment for finishing last was you got to walk back. Everybody else got to ride the Pelican, but you had to walk back, and this was out in the wilderness of Reach. So John would always make sure that he was the last one to finish so that everybody else got the ride home. And he would, you know, he would walk back. And he was also amazed at how well John did at that by himself, you know, going from the RV point and walking back to base all on his own, you know, no navigation equipment, nothing, just, you know, the clothes on his back. He mentioned how impressed he was that John could do that.
But then we start to see a sudden dark turn at the end of Walker's interview. Following on what you were just talking about, Walker says what he was able to do getting back on his own like that in pitch black without nav equipment, the man was the inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of leads into our next interview. But something that we actually discussed right before we hit the record button was, where does Walker kind of play into the story of Master Chief? Or is he one of these Oni plants that we were suspecting, or was this someone that was actually there? And from the way that Walker was talking, it was almost like he was there with John through boot camp and all that stuff. But the only way he would have been that way is if he himself was one of the abductees and he was training there right alongside John. And then he washed out after going through the augmentation process, which doesn't really seem like that's what happened, especially after getting to the very end of it, where he was talking about how what John was able to do sometimes was inhuman.
Yeah, the way he stated everything, it's like he was a witness to what happened. It's not like something, it's not like, it didn't seem like it's, you know, Oney handed him a script and this is what you read back to him. So I think that the guy was actually part of John's life, you know, when he was in boot camp, in the Spartan training. But the deal is, because there is a slight age difference, but not enough to really compensate for, you know, I think, because they said he was 50, right? Or where did they say in his 50s?
Like right now, yeah. I think he was in, he talked about like after 28 years of service, and at the time they were talking, he was getting into boot camp at 19. So yeah, he was probably in his 50s by the time.
Okay, so this there's interview probably came along. Between.
But at this point, John's 45.
Right, because we're looking probably 5 to 10 years age difference, depending on where in the 50s he is. The reason I bring that up is the other possibility is that he was one of the trainers.
Right.
If he was more towards the, you know, the 10-year difference, and he was a little later in the program, you know, like after John, you know, after the Spartans trainees were, you know, in their early teens,
mm-hmm.
he would have been around to witness a scene that they mentioned in Fall of Reach, where Mendez takes all the Spartans out in the middle of the woods, drops them off with a partial map and says, okay, find your way back, you know, find your way right. to the RV point.
Although that would have been way before the age of 16, like you said.
Yeah. Like I said, it all kind of depends on where in the 50s this guy is. You know, if he's 55, 56, 57, it's possible he would be old enough to be a trainer. Barely.
Right. Now, in the interview, Walker said that at the time he was 19, and he said, turns out that John was 16. So
I guess there's only three that age.
Yeah, if that age difference is true, and the age difference isn't that much, I don't think anyone in boot camp, though, would be transferred out as a trainer for these kids, though. So, in some aspects, this interview seems to kind of coincide with a lot of the stuff that we know from Fall of Reach, and doesn't really seem like a misleading plant by Oney, but at the same time, there are a few things in there that don't exactly add up, either.
Yeah, like the fact that John was in the, the regular military. Yes, he was going through boot camp, but he was going through the Spartan training. He wasn't in regular boot camp, so, you know, he wouldn't be exposed to this guy in a normal situation. But you know, he would have been in the middle of Spartan. Well, actually, at 16, he would probably be recovering from his augmentations, if I remember correctly. That sounds about right.
Right. And as we were talking, that at the time they did their augmentations, we kind of calculated out, because the beginning of the book for Fall of Reach starts at 25-17 when John was at the age of 6 when Halsey abducted him, and then 25-25 is when they did the augmentation. So he was 14 at the time that they did the physical augmentations to the kids.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
It's like some of the pieces from Walker matches up, but not everything does.
It's very interesting.
Well, and some of the stuff actually coincides with the book, too. The whole thing about them having to hike to catch the Pelican dropship, the whole thing about them having to navigate in the dark back.
Mm-hmm.
That was stuff that was mentioned in the books, and how he did take punishment for things, and he did try to be a leader. So all those things kind of coincide with the book. There's just a few minor discrepancies, but it's very, very minor compared to some of the other egregious claims that we'll see in the rest of... the rest of the... Take that back. The rest of the podcast is actually confirming the truth, so I take that back. But it kind of goes against a lot of the egregious stuff that we hear from the Oney plants.
Mm-hmm.
But the next one is with this Anthony Petroski guy. First line out of his mouth, he says, "That kid was a monster." All right, they all were. This one is an ODST. that been found through Meshach Maradi.
Mashan?
Meshach Maradi. Yeah. And I'm not sure where exactly this comes from, because this is the first time I've heard the name, but Ben says, yes, that Meshach Maradi, the truther who's been messaging me for months, and yes, I was pretty desperate for leads. So I guess this guy had heard, or wait, wasn't, actually, since I'm thinking about it now, wasn't there someone that contacted him last episode?
Yeah, the truther, the guy he's talking about. Yeah, okay,
so this is that guy. This is that guy.
He was the one that was stating that, I'll bet you Oni said that glass planets have bad records.
That's right, that's right. Gotcha. Yeah, so that guy managed to find this ODST person, which this kind of, this one lines up a lot more than Walker's does, this part of the interview. So Ben asks him to kind of go into details, being more specific about what he means by the kids were monsters and freaks. And he starts off by saying that him and a few other ODSTs were sparring in a gym. And so taking this and placing it somewhere in the confines of Fall of Reach, this would be an ODST that was part of the training group for the kids as Spartans.
I don't think so. Because the point that they're referencing now...
No, I mean, like during their Spartan training. I mean, like, they're not in the armor yet. I meant going through the training. Sorry.
Well, yeah, they're still going through the training. But the part that they're talking about is after they've received their augmentations.
Right.
Correct. And they're technically in recovery. But, you know, yes, that just to kind of give you a time frame. But go on.
Yeah. So Petrosky goes on to say that the kids were the ages of 12 and 13, which is true from the books. And Ben was like, wait, 12 and 13? John didn't finish boot camp until 17. You had to be wrong. And of course, Petrosky's like, no, this he's dead on set on what he knows. And then, of course, the ODSTs kind of got involved with John. They kind of got in a little bicker, and then they started mouthing off to each other. And this part actually coincides with the book. He says that as they were giving each other attitude, one of the CPOs comes in and orders the kid and the four guys to just start fighting it out. And this actually, so the only thing part I'll preface, well, no, I'll finish this part and then I'll go through what the book says. So the CPO orders the four ODSTs to just hammer it out with this kid in the ring. And Ben says, so four soldiers were sent in to fight a high schooler. And Petrosky's like, no, this is 12 and 13 year olds. And Ben's like, fine, either way. They ordered to fight. And Petrosky's like, it wasn't even a fight. It was done. They were lambs before the slaughter. And he goes into the detail. And from what Petrosky recounts, he said, just as they started off, the first punch, he hit the guy square in the chest and it instantly stopped his heart. He died. Another punch, just one punch, caved in the man's face and he died. Another ODST had a cracked pelvis, and then the other one had a broken spine who was never able to walk again. And Petrosky also mentions how the sound of the punches that this kid made didn't even sound like human punches. They sound like rapid fire explosions. And Petrosky wasn't one of the ODSTs. He was across the gym, which might explain why it's not as accurate to the book. But the things that John did to these ODSTs, Petrosky was convinced that it shouldn't have happened. From a kid that young, shouldn't have been able to take out four ODSTs like that.
Yeah, he made mention that
not human.
Yeah, you know, there was no one went in to break it up because it was over in it was over in 5 seconds.
Right, there was nothing to break up.
Mm-hmm. Now, going from the book, John is on a ship and they are in a zero G gym, or well, they're in a gym that has the different parts of the gym have different rates of gravity.
Right. Different gravity settings, basically.
Right. And John, with his new enhancements, is feeling off. you know, it's like picking up a 40-pound dumbbell and it only feels like it weighs 5 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he pulls a pan out of a weight bar to check the 1G setting to just to verify that, you know, he's doing it or that, you know, everything is correct in the room. And what happens is these four ODSTs come in and they start to work out. Well, one of them picks up the bar that he pulled the pen out of and it drops the weights and it, you know, it almost crushes the ODST. And that's what starts the fight. The other thing that really bugs me is that when, you know, when they look at, or when John goes into the weight room, it's empty. He's the only one there. So I'm trying to figure out at what point did this guy come in? Cause you know, they only mentioned the four ODSTs. Now it could just be simple oversight. But after that, you know, the ODSTs start mouthing off to John because, you know, he made him drop the weights.
Right.
And the CPO comes in and says, okay, guys, why don't you hop in the ring and settle it? And this is where, you know, the two stories start to line up, with the exception that one of the ODSTs takes the weight bar into the ring.
Yep.
So it's not necessarily what you would normally classify as a fair fight as far as, you know, beyond the point that you have 4-on-1. But the rest of the description of the fight is pretty straightforward in what the book says happened. He did kill two ODSTs and he did cripple one and seriously injure the other. The fight was a little bit more detailed in the book, but you know, I can understand why it's kind of abbreviated in this. And then as the last ODST falls, Mendez walks in and breaks it up. So
even though there's nothing to break up at that point.
Well, he basically he basically sends Chiefs to the showers. He just tells him, go get cleaned up. I'll talk to you here in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's already called the medics and all this and tells that CPO that he needs to report for debriefing.
Mm-hmm.
And the CPO says he's one of those. So it's like the CPO knows, oh shoot, this is one of these Spartan kids that they've been training. You know, he probably doesn't know that they're Spartans, but he knows that they've been heavily or genetically modified or surgically modified, however you want to put it.
Yeah.
So that, you know, the CPO figures that out at the end. So, you know, there's a lot of there's several discrepancies between the two stories.
But they match up.
They match up. The one thing,
this guy is obviously one of those guys that wasn't involved with Oni's weird recruiting thing. This is the truth. Mm-hmm. This is the truth part of this. And I mean, we can kind of correlate everything that Petrosky said to what happened. And I think the guy that first tried to attack John. John took his foot to the man's knee, punched him 3 times, hit him to the ropes. I think that was probably the guy that got his heart stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next guy was the one with the weight bar. He attacked John. John grabbed his fist around the bar, twisted his fist to break his bones around the bar.
Yeah, crushed his
hand.
And
then so there was that guy. And then the third guy, John took a sidekick to his groin. So that's the guy that had the damaged pelvis.
Yeah, that always makes me shudder.
Yeah, that's... And then the last guy, John takes the free barbell and breaks the man's neck.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the one that... It was the spine injury. And through all this interview, Ben doesn't believe him. Ben replies to when Petrosky says that he was basically, he believed him to be heavily genetically modified, mm-hmm, or augmented. Ben's like, so you're telling me that this guy was somehow genetically modified or genetically augmented as a child, even though they weren't genetically augmented, they were structurally augmented. Nothing really genetic was done, but the point of it is, Ben didn't believe him, and Petrosky's like, you think I'm lying? Hey, I mean, it doesn't make any difference to me, but I was there. I know what I saw.
I was there. You weren't. I know what I saw.
Exactly.
Click.
Yeah. Then Ben has a voiceover where he says that he knows Spartans go through a few augmentations, but those were for fully developed adults. And how could a 17-year-old go through that procedure or even survive that procedure?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed horribly risky if what Petrosky was saying was true, which exactly lines up with how risky the Spartan 2 program was, but yields to the success of how good the Spartan 2 program was because of what Halsey did.
True. You know, the only thing, you know, he's not seeing is the fact that, yeah, they did it to teens, but they were 13, not 17, when they went under the,
right.
You know, 13 to 14, when they went through the augmentations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's going to be interesting when he comes to that realization that what this guy says is true.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's going to be the equivalent of stepping out in front of a truck.
Well, he's already been getting hit by cars by now. And I think the more and more he goes into this, the more and more he realizes, oh, this is one giant cover-up that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little difficult to think about it, really, because if you try to view it in the perspective of what's going on in the universe, we already know everything that's gone on from the truth aspect of it, and everything right now is all in Fall of Reach. Everything that has been mentioned pretty much of the truth side of this story is in this Fall of Reach book.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I think eventually we'll probably do a book review for Fall of Reach, because this is good. But if anyone wants to go and see where this fight was, it's chapter 7 of Fall of Reach. So if you want to go and read that, and it's only like 7 or 8, 9 pages long, so it's a short read if you want to go kind of read up on that ODST fight. But the all the stuff that's been discussed from the truth side of things, we pretty much know. So it's interesting to see how they're kind of approaching it, like what the universe is actually portrayed to know, because we've never really seen that side of it. We've only seen the absolute, this is the side of the Spartan program and everything that's gone on behind the scenes with Oni, with the Covenant, with the Civil War, the Insurrectionists, and all that stuff. So it's interesting to see the difference in what people are exposed to inside the universe instead of being outside the universe and knowing what's going on.
I've really enjoyed the parallels that they are drawing with the book Fall of Reach. Because a lot of the stuff, there's so much similarity. I mean, yeah, there's little tweaks and stuff, but, you know, we're dealing with an audio podcast and, you know, not a book. Because, I mean, the book in an audio form is 12 hours long, so, you know, you can't put all the detail in there. It's really intriguing me. And it's actually got me wanting to listen to the Fall of Reach again after I get caught up
you
on
can
my podcast.
Listen, I'll read. Yeah.
I got to get caught up on my podcast first. Got to get all the latest and greatest.
Oh, God.
But anyway, so many.
The next thing that comes up in the podcast, though, is Ellie Bloom comes back to follow up yet again with more stuff because Ben apparently sent her a review copy of episode 1 and wanted feedback on it. So when she was ready to get back to him, he actually went off of Waypoint and got on ChatterNet, which I guess is kind of like a back site kind of chat that's supposed to be off official channels kind of thing. And Ellie had to say two big things. First was that Dion Governor is an absolute liar and a fraud, which I didn't fully expect to be just completely outright, but it fits very well with our assumptions that Oni's been planting the story the whole time.
Yeah. It's really, after that, after what she states, you can see that, yeah, everything he said was a lie.
So Ellie comes in saying that there was never any boxing league, no boxing at the high school. In fact, boxing at the turn of the century hadn't even been a thing because there were questions about the ethicality behind whether kids should be boxing. And there was a big injury that happened a long time ago, and it started a controversy on whether or not this was legal. So by the time that John was in school, there was no boxing pretty much anywhere on Eridanus 2.
Yeah, they basically just banned boxing as a sport. So there's there's no way they're going to be having a boxing class in high school.
And she compared it to having a gun range in a toy store.
I thought that was a nice comparison.
I thought it was too.
You know,
puts it into a lot more perspective.
True. And it gives you that the shock factor that you're looking for in that kind of stuff. So basically she confirms that John never was in the boxing club because the boxing club never existed.
First thing about Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club.
I was waiting for that one to show up again.
Yep. There you go. I figured I had to drop it. It's appropriate here, I think.
Sure.
First rule about Fight Club, don't talk about Fight Club.
But the other things that she says, more discrediting to what he had to say.
Right, which was that there was no insurrectionist takeover. There was never any kidnappings by the rebels at Elysium City. And Ben's like, hold on, that cannot be true. Yep. There is a well-documented presence of insurrectionists in Elysium. And Ellie comes back and said, yeah, there was, but it was only political. There was rarely any violence. There was no one abducted. It was just a big political presence. So everything that the boxing coach has said is a complete and utter fabrication. Complete lie.
Now, she even adds the fact that Elysium was basically a place where refugees would go.
Mm-hmm. The only place that really didn't get hit by the insurrectionists. So after hearing all of this, Ben is frantically trying to figure out, okay, what is it that does not make sense about the story? Why are there so many holes? So he's trying to go back and reach out to these contacts to straighten out the story. So he can't get a hold of Dion Govender, can't get a hold of Gabriella Dvorak, who is the lieutenant on the Under the Breach. But he was able to get a hold of Thomas Wu, who talked about was it episode 1 or episode 2, talking about the insurrectionist camps? I think it was episode 1.
Yeah, episode 1.
Talking about how bad the camps were and just how horrible the experience was. So Ben calls Tom up, and it's late at night, so of course he's a little bit disoriented. And Ben's like, I hate to bring this up, but are you absolutely certain that Elysium City was under violent control of insurrectionists? And Thomas Wu is like, I told you this before. And Ben's like, I know, but are you absolutely sure? And Ben does an interesting play here where he kind of leads Wu on this trail of trying to get him to confirm. He basically says, you listed off all these cities on Eridanus 2, but you paused when you got to Elysium City. And when he said that, Thomas Wu kind of cracked and is like, wait, you're defending them now? After they didn't take us in? After they didn't help us out? So this kind of leads to the fact that he was there, but Elysium actually was not affected, and it hurt him kind of badly, too.
Yeah.
So this reinforces Ellie's and Katrina's viewpoint on what happened in Elysium City.
And the best part of this conversation is, he tricks him into saying this, and then, he's basically, Wu says, I shouldn't be talking to you, and hangs up. And then Ben makes the realization he just had this conversation over Waypoint.
Yeah, where anyone could be listening.
Where anybody could be listening.
Yep.
And, after the fact that he has questioned Oni twice about this story, you can pretty much bet they're probably listening to every communication that he
has.
So,
definitely.
Now, the next thing is, what happens next?
Well, before he ended the call, one of the things that really stuck out to him, which I don't know how this is going to play out on the podcast, but it definitely reinforces the whole Oni thing, is that Wu says, I just want peace of mind for my family. That's all I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben's like, wait, how does telling me or lying to me that there were insurrections in Elysium City give you peace of mind for your family. And Ben says how Wu became lucid and his tone entirely changed, where that was the point where Wu realized, oh, I completely screwed up.
Yeah.
This cover I was supposed to play, I just wrecked it. And that's when he says, I shouldn't be talking to you. Leave me alone.
It kind of
very suspicious.
Yeah.
At this point, you have to be convinced that this is completely set up.
Well, yeah, you can pretty much say that with any of the Oni provided interviews, that, you know, they were staged for the benefit of the story that they want Ben to tell, which is not that they abducted 6-year-olds.
And heavily modified them and augmented them to be super soldiers. And we haven't even gotten to the part where they were originally engineered to fight the insurrectionists, not the Covenant.
True.
So I'm wondering where this is going to, because I'm sure that will play a part in this podcast at some point, where the main reason for this wasn't to fight the Covenant, but the insurrectionists. I'm waiting for that piece to come out. I'm pretty sure it's coming.
Yeah, I think that piece is going to be coming here pretty soon.
I would say we have to, next 3 episodes at the, it would have to be somewhere in there at least.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe the next 2. Because he's already put together, well, he's already starting to put together that John was 13. He just hasn't accepted it yet. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't too long after that where they started actually putting the Spartans out on missions.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you know, one of their first missions was to capture an insurrectionist leader. And I'm trying to remember what year that was. I'd have to look it up again. I don't remember off the top of my head. But, you know, that's, you know, right after they shortly after they complete their recovery on on the space station. No, this is after they're back on Reach. And they actually have to move the program underground to keep prying eyes from watching.
I don't know, because the book jumps from 2525 to 2552.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure where that exactly falls in.
Yeah, there was some stuff between those two dates that happened that they didn't mention dates for. I think, oh darn, I'm going to have to go through it again now. Got me questioning myself. But anyway.
Time to reread The Fall of Reach.
Yes.
I was surprised I was able to find that ODST fight, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I knew it was somewhere in the book, and it's just a matter of going through and actually pulling it out.
Yeah, it was pretty early in the book, so yeah, it's good that you were able to find that. But I'm going to have to go through that first trilogy again, and at least Reach and First Strike. We pretty much know what happens in Flood, because that's the game.
Yeah, with a few extra stories in there, and you get a little more of what happened to Johnson and... Yeah.
But I don't think...
It's a good companion.
Yeah. Well, don't get me wrong. I enjoy the book, and I enjoy the extra stories that they have in it, you know, along with the Halo CE campaign. You know, there's one really memorable part in that book, and it's when Chief is following 343 Guilty Spark, and he comes across that Marine. And he basically looks down at the Marine and realizes how hard it's been for Chief to get this far to the library. And he basically looks down at this Marine and says, I forget the Marine's name, but you're one bad son of a bitch. You know, and it just that line. You know, yeah, I really wish I knew you, because you were one mean son of a bitch. It's like, really? You know, you just don't, you never really think, you know, I never really thought of Chief speaking in those terms. You know,
yeah, because of his, like, how he just kind of trained. Yeah.
You know, speaking like a Marine. Uh-huh. You know, that's the reason they say a sailor's mouth will make you blush. It's just that line in there. It's something that it just kind of steps out of character for just a little bit, and then he's right back into it. And that's always it's the one line that I always remember out of that book. Not verbatim, but I remember the line and the message behind the line.
Right.
But I don't know how much of the First Strike they could work into this. because that really wasn't in the public eye as far as, you know, like the, you know, the glassing of Iridanus, the attack on Reach, stuff like that. This kind of happened, you know, in between the events. Well, it was the trip from the, you know, back from Halo to, you know, back to back to Earth. So I don't know if there's anything they could really draw on from that. The next question is, you know, after that, where are they going to go next in the story?
Well, and something that you said kind of had me think about something else, where why all of a sudden is Oni interested in having someone investigate Chief's past? Why is the interest of Chief's past all of a sudden a thing? Is it because we're now labeling him as a traitor and people are curious of what his background actually was and how he maybe got to this traitorous state? Or like what? That's a question I'm starting to think about now is why all of a sudden is there this interest?
Yeah, you know, at first I was thinking it was kind of a, you know, a CYA deal. You know, they're just trying to get a story out in the public eye that's believable and cover up the fact of what they did. But all of a sudden now it's starting to seem like there's more to it than that. You know, it's like they've got Benjamin investigating the Chief to maybe, you know, almost profiling.
Yeah.
You know, like they're trying to predict what he'll do next.
I mean, I think we kind of know what direction that's going in. And we've mentioned it on the show where there's this greater calling for humanity, which Chief and Halsey are basically pursuing. Halsey, I think, understands a little bit more because of her research and scientific background, but Chief's more like, this is what I know I have to do kind of thing, where it's like, I don't fully understand why I'm doing this, but I know this is what needs to be done.
Yeah. You know, with Halsey, right now, at least in the universe, what I get out of what they're doing with her is she's on an information hunt.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to gather as much Forerunner information as she can. I don't think she's really come to the determination of helping humanity attain the mantle. I think right now she's on the hunt for information that she can use to hurt Oni. Because, I mean, right in the Spartan Ops cutscene, you know, Jewel asks why she's so willing to help. And she basically says it, revenge.
But, and I mentioned this.
I mean, that's not her only motivation, because at Halsey, at her core, she's an information sponge. She always has been.
Yep.
She stated that, you know, multiple times in her journal and in conversations, you know, when she's talking about, you know, when she was talking about in her younger years, you know, she would absorb all this information and she drove her parents nuts with all this information that she was, you know, she would learn. And I think, you know, the main focus for her, I think, is the information part of it. Now, she may come around to wanting to help humanity achieve the mantle in, you know, with at least with the way they're looking, you know, the way they've kind of wrote her character to be penance for what she's done. But I don't think she's quite to that point yet. And then on the Chief, I really do think it has a lot to do with the librarian. She unlocked something other than the ability to resist the composer. She unlocked information in Chief's head, whether it be past human history, past Forerunner history, something that is taking him, I think, is mostly responsible for the path he's taking. At least that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we talked about the last podcast how there's the Gaiash that may have some kind of embedded memory or personality in Chief. So I think that's very possible. I would be a little surprised if there wasn't something, or at least kind of maybe not specifically a memory, but maybe an influence.
Mm-hmm. There's something there guiding the Chief.
I agree with you there.
It, like you said, you know, going back to this hunt of truth, it's just, you know, as heavily as they're drawing on Reach, you know, the Fall of Reach right now, to put that doubt in, you know, the newcomers and Benjamin's mind, just, you know, the way they're playing with the different stories or different parts of that book in this podcast, it just really makes me wonder where they're going to jump to next.
Well, for me, it's my wonder is where are they going to jump to? And it's something that we've never seen before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's going to be some of that too, but I'm thinking that's probably going to be later on.
Yeah,
probably around episode 6 or 7 is when the new stuff probably is going to start trickling in. It would be nice if it comes in sooner, and I definitely won't argue with it.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, it may come in right after they finish up with, you know, this Reach thing, because I mean they've almost gotten to the point where, you know, John gets his armor. They're getting real close to that.
Yeah,
and I'm sure they're going to bring up, you know, a few more little pieces of the Fall of Reach in, you know, the, at least the next couple episodes to, you know, get it to where, you know, John is, you know, officially a Spartan, and, you know, just to, you know, mess with, you know, try to mess with the timeline they're trying to set for Chief.
Right. Cause I have a feeling they're going to go somewhere along the same route as, or try to make it fit with how the other Spartan programs went through a similar augmentation, or I guess mm-hmm. focus more on how the Spartan Force did it, where John got to an adult age and then he went through the augmentations to become a Spartan.
Right.
Like how you have most of the Spartan Force today.
Yeah, they're going to definitely try to play it off like that, to where that, you know, he volunteered to become a Spartan and that he went through the augmentations as an adult, not as a child.
Right. The only thing that I kind of question right now is because we've seen so much in terms of conflicting views or stories in the Hunt the Truth podcast so far, where he's still going down this path of trying to figure out why these things don't fit. So at some point, does he just say, okay, I'm just going to forget this for now and then move on to the next part of John's life and then find out more loose threads? Or is this going to be something where this whole loose thread thing just still permeates and grows? Because for the first episode, we have one line that mentions something that's contradictory, which is the death record.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second episode, we get to where it's maybe about 30% is talking about the contradictory part. In this episode, we have like 50 or 60% where it's talking about the truth contradicting what people have been saying.
You know, I think we're going to continue to see this. I mean, he's found the rabbit hole and he's already done dove in. I just see it expanding from here, where to the point where we're almost seeing two separate stories. We're seeing the story that Oni wants to portray, and then we're seeing the real story, you know, the stuff that actually did happen. Because I think I don't see him letting this go. I don't see him saying, okay, I'm just going to put this aside and I'm going to focus on this and, you know, do this and I'll worry about the loose threads later. I really believe that he's going to keep digging. Now, he may put on the appearance that he's not, but he's going to keep digging because he wants to know the truth. And he made that very clear in the opening sequence on the primer. You know, how he talked about, this was going to be a cut and dry story about Master Chief, and it was nowhere near that. So, you know, he's done jumped in the rabbit hole with both feet and trying to do the splits. So I really do think we're going to continue to see this Oni storyline, you know, where they provide the interviews and, you know, it's all hunky dory and Master Chief was just a patriot at heart and, you know, he wanted to fight to protect the human race and all this and, you know, all the stuff that we know John was just at an earlier age than what they're portraying. You know,
right.
So far, they're not really discounting Chief's character. You know, they're showing him as this, you know, the war hero, they're portraying him as that type of person. The part that's going to get interesting is when that starts to change, when all of a sudden, because they're going to start us down this traitor path. They're not going to answer the question, but they're going to get us wound up for it. You know, they'll start us down this path and just leave us hanging. unfortunately. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do to change that. You know, how does the story, how is the story going to alter to go from, here is Master Chief, you know, the savior of the human race, and now he's a traitor. It's going to be an interesting twist in the story. And, you know, alongside of this, you know, Ben is going to find out the actual story and to see what that turns up, see how much that lines up with what the, you know, the only official story is going to be. So we prepare yourself, people. We're in for some interesting twists.
Interesting, I think, is an understatement.
That's the best word I can pick. I know we've been using it a lot lately, but that's the best thing I got.
Yeah. There's lots of stuff coming. I can feel it. And I know that there's going to be lots of things that hopefully we would not have seen before, at least for us who have read the books and everything. But if anyone out there has actually not read the books and is going through this the first time, first of all, sorry for spoilers. Second of all, we'd actually like to hear what you guys think of the whole Hunt the Truth campaign, because for us that we've been in the Halo universe for a long time and that we know a lot of the background behind Halo, it's hard to get another perspective on what other people actually think of it. So if there's something that you guys have out there that you have a different perspective on all the stuff that we're going through, we'd love to hear about it. We'd love to hear what you guys think and how, what your responses are to actually finding this stuff out for the very first time. Because I think for us, we get, I think I speak for both of us here, where we get spoiled because we already know the truth behind it. So it's like the only thing that we're really getting out of it is, oh, this is what the universe actually knows versus as we know what actually happened in the universe. And that's kind of interesting, but there's also like the mystery to it is just kind of eluded from us. Is that, would you agree with that, Godzilla?
Yeah,
to
an extent. I mean, it's interesting in the fact that, you know, you see these two different storylines taking place. And, you know, as, you know, people that have followed the lore, you know, played all the games, read the books, the comics, which I still got a lot of work to do on comics. But
me too.
As someone that is into the lore, that I know a lot of, you know, I know quite a bit about it. I'm by no means an encyclopedia on it. I've proven that multiple times on this podcast alone. I would love I would love to see an outsider's point of view. Someone that has maybe played the games, or maybe somebody that's read a couple of the books or none of the books and played none of the games. And, you know, maybe this is your first experience with the Halo franchise. It would be awesome to hear your point of view. Tell us what you see in this Hunt the Truth campaign, because you have kind of a unique, you have a unique point of view that we really can't come from, because we do know all this backstory. So exactly. you know, what we think of the Hunt the Truth campaign, it's, you know, it's colored by that, because we know what, you know, what the lore has said in the past, and we can see what, you know, Oni is lying about now. But yeah, I would love to see, I would love to see somebody tell me, or, you know, to message us and say, hey, you know, this is the way I look at it. You know, give us a little bit of background, you know, tell us, you know, if, you know, if you've read the books or if you just play the games or if you're just a complete newcomer to the series, and, you know, tell us what you think, because it would be great to see your point of views.
Couldn't agree more. So one last thing that I would like to mention before we wrap this up is there's a new Twitter account that popped up that has the name Benjamin Giro on it, but the handle is kind of this weird hexadecimal value. And there was one tweet from it. Actually, I should probably look it up and see if there's been any other tweets from it since then.
I'm checking right now, actually.
Are you?
Nope. Only the one tweet.
Only the one. So one tweet was sent out, and this was actually sent over towards More Console. And it was a picture, and he was able to verify with 343 that this is an official tweet. Do you have the Twitter handle on you that you can read off?
Benjamin's? Yeah. It's at 22052124 lowercase e.
There you go. Actually, case doesn't matter on Twitter, but yeah. So there was an official image that came out, and it's basically the screen that, or it looks like the screen that when Ben was talking to Oni, it's almost like a kind of a Skype window.
Yeah.
In a way.
It's basically similar to what you would see if you're making a Skype call. You know, you have right. video portion in the middle, and then you have your contact list off to the left-hand side.
Right. So there's a list in here of people that he's been talking with. Some of them we already know. M. Moradi, we know. T. Wu, D. Govender, E. Bloom, M. Sullivan, and P. Jenikek, which I don't think we've seen that name pop up yet.
Actually, it is in the lore, and I will have to give Halo Canon the credit for this one because he's the one that pointed it out to me. Because he did a review of episode 3 on it, and she is a war reporter. And in the Exhalation comics...
Oh, another fellow reporter.
Uh-huh. And in the Escalation. Escalation, thank you.
There you go.
She actually, in a few issues, teams up with Thomas Lasky to do... I forget what the investigation was about right off the top of my head, but to do some investigations in there. So she is, you know, she is kind of a developed character in the universe.
Okay. Interesting. I find it interesting also that the icons for all the people are the resupply icons from Reach.
Yeah. You like that?
That was kind of interesting. I just now recognize that. But the it's nothing too major in terms of contributing to the whole Hunt the Truth campaign, but it is a cool little screenshot that we have there. And it does have all the kind of what you would expect on there. It has Waypoint, secured connection with video, and Sully's in Boston, Massachusetts. Has the confidentiality of the call, encryption, authentication, all that stuff that you would see in the books otherwise for all those journal entries or log entries or whatever, but on the interface for this video call. So that was kind of cool.
And the best part of that whole picture is it says, you are holding.
Yeah. Where Ben was mentioning how long he would have to hold, or anyone would have to hold if you wanted to talk to Oni.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be it for tonight, for this episode. Got a lot to talk about. Sorry for holding you over, GT. But as always, great Halo discussions. There's lots of stuff coming with Hunt the Truth. I'm eagerly awaiting the moment where we finally learn something that we don't know what's going on. I'm anticipating it. I'm waiting for that moment.
It's coming. I have no doubt about that. There is going to be information that we don't know in this series, and it is going to be awesome when they actually do reveal that, and I'm sure we're all just going to fall over.
Mind's blown.
Yeah. So to speak. Give me one more week. I'm still recovering from Receptor.
That was 2 weeks ago, dude.
I know. But I just
You're
re-listened.
Still recovering?
I just re-listened to the podcast.
Oh, that's your own problem.
Yes, people, I do no listen offense. To the podcast, so I keep everything straight-ish.
I'm glad you do, because I do enough with editing the podcast. I don't really worry about it afterwards.
I can understand that. You know, after you've recorded the podcast and then spend your time editing the podcast, I'm sure the last thing you want to do is listen to the podcast.
Yeah, I focus on just getting it out the door and then moving on to the next podcast.
You know, I don't get to come to all of them, and I don't get to be all, on all of them. So I make sure that I listen to them. So when I do get a chance to be on, I can kind of keep my facts straight.
Well, you are a better supporter than I, sir. But all joking aside, we got a great show tonight. I think we're going to have lots of more great Hunt the Truth shows in the future. And again, we're kind of making the split show We're going to be doing the Hunt of Truth show separate from the rest of the show, which is going to still contain all of our news updates, community updates, Tales from the Foxhole if we get any of those stories or submissions, call-ins, all that kind of stuff. We're still going to be doing that stuff. It's just we're now breaking off the Hunt of Truth segment since we usually have a lot to talk about to actually get that condensed in its own form, because we took an hour and 20 minutes just to talk about this. So it's a good chunk of podcast on its own. So we're going to break that up that way. We're going to be doing that until the end of the Hunt the Truth podcast campaign, which is going to lead up until E3. So with that, what thing on Friday?
Game night.
Oh, sure. I can mention that. With that, we're going to wrap it up for tonight. So again, you'll be able to expect us again on Thursday night, which if you're hearing this before then you can hop on the live stream and talk with us there. Or you can catch us on our game night, which is going to be Friday. We're going to be back on our regular schedule for the Master Chief Collection. We had a lot of fun playing Halo 3 ODST, even though it was lag city once again. It was still a lot of fun.
I have to admit, even with Bio in my party, I had a pretty lag-free game, which is really scary. Yeah, we only had one small, 30-second point where we actually suffered from really bad lag. But for the most part, it was pretty much smooth sailing. And I was really surprised, especially having Bio in my party.
For those who don't know, hashtag blame Biowolf.
Mm-hmm. Or SquirrelNet.
SquirrelNet? I thought it was Hamster. Did we decide on squirrels?
Well, it all depends on how well his internet's working that week.
Oh, okay.
If it changes out
the rodents.
Yeah. You know, if it's a little bit better, then I think we move to squirrel, and then when it's a little worse, we go to hamster. You know, shorter legs.
Well, and very soon he might be getting the upgrade to horsepower.
Yeah, true.
So he might not be the brunt end of those jokes anymore.
Sure he will.
It's the end of an era. Blame him anyways, huh?
Yeah, sure. Why not? One note for the game night on Friday. Unfortunately, I will not be able to host it, but we will put out a tweet giving you the person that will be hosting it, because I unfortunately have to do some heavy maintenance on my wife's vehicle that includes installing a new engine. So everybody, please pray for me.
Don't electrocute yourself or do anything else that would be side effect of working on an engine. I don't know. I've never worked with cars, so I don't know what the danger implications of are replacing an engine or whatnot.
Well, the major danger of replacing an engine is being squished. So I really don't intend on putting my body in a point where it could be squished. So we're gotcha. Good there. But anyway, like I said, we'll put out a tweet letting you know who to message for game night. We're just trying to get locked down that who's going to be available for that, but we will make sure that it does happen.
Yeah. I think we decided that was going to be me. So
if it's going to be you, then we'll make sure we get that tweet out to message you.
Exactly. So with that said, make sure you check out our website, podtacular.com. While you're there, head on over to the forums, participate in our Hunt the Truth discussion. You can find that in the Halo 5 forum. And I think there's one thread that we have for Hunt the Truth, and we're just kind of containing everything there. So if you have anything to say specifically about Hunt the Truth, or if you have any kind of opinions or revelations, like Receptor's mind-blowing revelation from a couple weeks ago, then feel free to drop us a line there. Or you can always hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, or send us an email, submissions@podtacular.com, or use the big green button on our homepage. Or you can call our listener voicemail 240-200-HALO. And you can also check us out on Instagram. We're going to be posting our collage of PAX East pictures here pretty soon. And then we're on YouTube, which the silent cartographer is going to be, right? No, wait.
Silent cartographer.
Is that the latest one?
The latest one.
So, yeah. Pillar of Autumn, Halo, Truth and Reconciliation, Silent Cartographer. Yeah, so Silent Cartographer is going to be coming out here, I said, really soon last time, so it's basically a day out for now. I think I'm not sure if I'm going to post it tomorrow as of this recording or the day after, because we actually have a lot of content coming out over the next 2 days. But make sure you check that out on the YouTube channel. that'll be coming out here very soon. And Godzilla, once again, you're doing a great job with it. I don't know how much feedback you're getting, but they are some pretty cool guides. If you guys have not checked them out, going through all the achievements you could possibly get in a single campaign run through. And which, they're really good.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun to plan out.
I bet it's a headache too.
Oh, honestly, the hardest part about getting it is getting the list together, because I have to scroll through basically all the cross game achievements.
And the bandana skull.
Oh God, don't start with me. Anyway, I have to scroll through, you know, all the cross game achievements, and then I also have to scroll through the per game achievements just to make sure that, you know, I'm giving you guys the information that help you maximize the amount of achievements that you can pick up in a campaign run. And I try to, you know, I'm trying to show you how you can, you know, chain these achievements together so that you can pick them all up on one pass through. And, you know, by no means, guys, do any of you have to do it on Legendary or with the skulls that I turn on. I just do that because I think it adds a little bit of extra challenge to the missions. And actually, in some cases, it actually helps me. And, you know, if you want to play it on Legendary, by the time you get done with playing the entire game, you're going to pick up 4 extra achievements, because you'll pick up for completing on easy, normal, hard, and Legendary all at the same time. So, you know, if you guys want to do it that way, that's great, but play it on whatever difficulty you want. I have had some comments come through, people really loving the series, but they're having a little trouble with Legendary. So I'm telling you that, you know, if, you know, you're having a little trouble with Legendary, go ahead and back it down, get your achievements, and then you can make another playthrough on Legendary to pick up that Legendary achievement.
Cool. Legendary be hard. Especially Halo 2. You're going to have fun with Halo 2, I'm sure.
I'm thinking co-op.
Ah, okay.
I may have to...
Which one of us unfortunate people are you going to drag into the co-op?
I may have to sucker somebody into it. I don't know who that'll be.
All right. So make sure you check that out when it gets posted. Again, it'll be posted here pretty soon. So that'll be up. And finally, make sure you check out our podcast network. We are at thepodcast.net. That is thepodcast.net. And you can find other podcasts like Guardian Radio, Critscast, Work in Progress, How to Murder Time, and the recently added The Learning Cliff, which is an EVE Online podcast. So if you guys are interested in listening to some other really good gaming podcasts, or just kind of want something else to pass the time, then those are some really good podcasts to check out. I highly recommend you go over to the podcast network and see what all the different podcasts are about. And that'll be it for us tonight. Thank you, everyone, for listening and tuning in. We will be back next week for episode 4 of Hunt the Truth, and we will be back on Thursday for our regularly scheduled programming. Doesn't that sound all official?
I'm like, oh God, he went TV announcer.
You know, adds a certain bit of class, I think.
Sure.
Or maybe that's just all in my head. Finally, make sure you send in screenshots. We're looking for community screenshots. So if you are good at taking screenshots, or if you want to take some screenshots of some epic moments, then send them to us. Tweet them at us. Facebook them to us. Post it in our forums. Whatever. Link to the xboxdvr.com file, and we will be more than happy to throw it up in our screenshot compilation for the week. So do it. We want screenshots. We need screenshots.
More basically screenshots.
What it boils down to. Yes. What are you going to say?
It's gone now.
You don't remember.
It wasn't that important.
All right. Until next time, keep on fragging Oni fabricated lies.